Lisa Scottolini is the New York Times bestselling author and Edgar Award-winning author of 24 novels, including her latest work, Corrupted. She also writes a weekly column with her daughter for the Philadelphia Inquirer titled Chick Wit, which is a fun take on life from a woman's perspective. The stories, along with many other never-before-published stories, have been collected in 6 books, including their most recent, Does This Beach Make Me Look Fat? Lisa reviews popular fiction and nonfiction, and her reviews have appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Philadelphia Inquirer. She served as president of Mystery Writers of America and has taught a course she developed, Justice and Fiction, at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, her alma mater. She has over 30 million copies of her books in print and is published in over 35 countries. The new novel is Corrupted, and it is always a pleasure to welcome Lisa Scottolini to the roundtable this morning. Lisa, always a blast to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I love talking to you.
It's wonderful having you on the program again. How did you come to this particular story at this particular time for these particular characters?
Exactly the question, right? I think for me, you know, every novel has to proceed from something that's emotionally true in my life. And actually what happened is I've gotten older and I sort of look back at my life and I was actually thinking about what regrets I had. Like, what would I have done differently? And part of that game is you assume you would have done it differently. And I kind of wonder if that's true. So actually I wanted to explore that with Benny, who's kind of like my, you know, I write 3 novels a year. I write these, I write 3 books a year. I write this Rosato and D'Annunzio novel, which is a series that's kind of rebooted.
Right.
And I write standalones that come out in April, and I write these humorous nonfiction books, kind of like Irma Bombeck with my daughter. But like I say, everything has to come from some emotional truth. And I thought, well, Benny is a character I've lived with for a long time, and she's the person who should really make this kind of retrospective look on her life. And I kind of wanted to call her bluff. And so here's a case that revisits her. It's a case that she lost 13 years ago involving a juvenile who was sent to actually incarcerated, adjudicated delinquent, and incarcerated wrongly for just getting into a fight in the cafeteria. And 13 years later, she sees a chance to right that wrong. Not only did she lose for him, but there was a whole judicial corruption scheme behind it, unbeknownst to her, which is actually based on real life, and we can talk about that more if you like. But what I wanted, the task for her is that, you know, sort of the case that haunted her, and kind of also a guy. Like, there's a man, she was in love, what happened, and would she do it differently if she got the choice?
So when
that's
you,
really where it came from.
When you think of that, do you often make the connections of what has gone right, what has gone wrong in your life through your work, through your cases, through your novels?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think it's Annie Poole, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, said something like she doesn't know what she thinks about something until she writes about it. I understand that. Mainly it's because, like, of the authors I've met, they divide evenly into people who write with an outline and have it all filled out and figured out, and then people like me, who kind of have an idea and go with it. And if you're that latter school, kind of the kamikaze school of, you know, running your career, although I've done it that way for 25 years and 25 books, kind of works for me. But I don't know, I wouldn't advise it because you become basically hell to live with, because you're more anxious. So I'm kind of like, well, let's see if I'm going to figure this out as I go. And I kind of do. It's not the worst thing either, because I think, briefly put, I think there is some little bit of magic. Like Elizabeth Gilbert says, big magic. But I think it's like almost alchemical that if I am nervous about something when I write, like what's going to happen, if I don't know what's going to happen next, which I don't whenever I write, you know, people say, do you know how your books end? I don't even know how they middle. Like, I don't know anything. Are you impressed yet?
Yeah.
I remember you're easy to talk to, so I'm just coming out with it. But I think that this nervous tension that I have about what is going to happen will somehow chemically transmit to the reader and we'll both be on the edge of our seats. And then the surprise ending will be a surprise even to me. I mean, it's not how I think it's supposed to work, but how it worked for me.
As you mentioned, this is based on a true story, and as you note in the acknowledgments, a true-life judicial scandal that took place in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. So what happened?
Yeah, in short, it's just awful. What happened was that there was the juvenile court judge was in secret cahoots with another judge on the court, actually the president judge, and they were both had a secret agreement with a builder. The builder happened to be building a prison, a juvenile prison. And the idea was, I'll build the prison and I'll pay you judges and you can stock it for me. I mean, they basically almost had a quota that they met. And it was, we will send you juveniles to fill your juvenile prison. Those judges received over a million dollars for what they did. They were convicted of tax evasion and theft of honest services, which is a crime in Pennsylvania that says when you're a judge, you're not allowed to make money on the side without disclosing it. That's what they could get them on. But obviously it was a horrific scheme because what ended up happening, it started in the days of zero tolerance, if you remember, with Columbine and all that. And that's why everybody was so hoodwinked because you thought, well, we're getting the bad kids out of school. God forbid these kids shoot up anybody. School shooting is awful. And we need to stop it. So we're putting the bad apples away. But actually, thousands of kids were caught up in this net. And that for the most minor thing, posting something then on MySpace, making fun of a teacher, fussing in the cafeteria. And these kids had their lives ruined. I mean, they were in the juvenile system, which is very hard to get out of once you're in it. Many were in prison for years and taken away from homes and families. And the novel, really, I mean, I did the research. I sat down with a psychiatrist who treated juveniles, and they come out with PTSD. I mean, so I really wanted to sort of not play in real time the scandal, but mainly use it to sort of look back and really ask a harder question, which is, can you ever get justice? Like those bad judges were sent to, they're serving time for decades, actually. But is that justice? The victims, who are now of age that this kid would be in the novel in their 20s, they got reparations, some of them as much as $5,000. Is that justice? I don't think so. So I really wanted to ask sort of what are the effects? When you look at the effects of judicial corruption, you really want to examine it in a little more depth than newspaper accounts of the day did. And that's what I really used the novel for, that opportunity.
When did you start in your life to become fascinated with the law?
Probably when I was little, and I'm so old that I watched Perry Mason, and I wanted to be Perry Mason. Then I actually grew up and went to law school and felt a little more like Della Street, which is a reference that none of your listeners will.
Barbara Hale.
But, yeah, there you go. Oh my God, you are the best. You are the best. I know, and I just thought I loved being. I was a trial lawyer, a corporate trial lawyer, and I really liked it. But when my daughter was born, I kind of quit because I was a single mom. And I basically stayed home to raise her. And that's when I became a lawyer. So I became a writer. But I loved being a lawyer. And I just love the issues of justice and kind of where law doesn't lead to justice, frankly, where law can even thwart justice. I mean, there's no better example than the underlying judicial corruption scheme here. Law was thwarting justice. Law was bought and sold. And that is something that happens, and I don't like to let it pass unnoticed. I like to examine it. So I think I've always been interested. I think a lot of people are interested in justice, don't you? Like kind of, the difference between right and wrong and illegal and unethical and ethical, and how does that, what are the differences and what effect does it have?
Which is why crime novels are such a popular genre.
Yes, I think they are. I mean, I think, and to certain degrees, some are more interested in that kind of in-depth examination than others. But I like to think I'm one of those that is a little more thoughtful.
When
a lot of book clubs like my books for that reason. I'm thinking about stuff. It's not really like body count stuff. That's what I always want to make clear. It's not like, like that. I don't like those kind of books.
No, you want to present an issue and explore it.
Exactly.
When you look at something, do you think, whether this is consciously or unconsciously, do you think of it through the eyes of as a lawyer? I mean, is that hard to come out of that background?
Well, what's interesting is that there's different types of lawyers. And you know, the joke is like you're a recovering lawyer. I mean, it's like, you know, a blood infection. You never really shake it. But I think that, see, Benny is the main character in this book. Her new partner, Mary D'Annunzio, they're both lawyers, but they're very different women. And I think the way when I started writing about these characters, actually in 1994, if you can believe that, I really wanted to come at it from the view of you're writing about a character and a person. Maybe because I had quit being a lawyer to become a mom, I never identified by my occupation. And I think more and more people are not. And that's to the good, because we aren't just merely what we do to make money, or even if we love it. Because I see it from the other end, too. People retire. I remember my dad retiring for a while. He was an architect, feeling a little bit at sea because all of a sudden he wasn't an architect anymore. And I was like, well, you're still you. And so these are both lawyers, but they look at them differently, and they're different lawyers than the kind of lawyer I was. Benny's tougher, and I'm a little more insecure. I mean, if you're going to write fiction, you got to make it better than you are. That's my goal. She's naturally blonde. She's tall. She works out all the time. Come on.
Lisa Scottolini's new novel is Corrupted, and it is published by St. Martin's Press. We began the conversation by talking about how you came to this novel and wanting to look back and take a look at where you've been. Do you do the psychological work through the writing, or do you do psychological work, perhaps as you should do psychological work, with a psychiatrist or psychologist, and then it comes as a result of that?
Well, you know, I confessed, although I don't even say confess, I just like to make you laugh, but I had 10 years of therapy.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. And I'm graduated and cured, as you can undoubtedly tell. So I like to think that I come by it honestly, because I think probably therapy is a lot like law school. It trains you to think in certain ways. And I hope I do that better. But I must tell you, I think a lot of people, I'm tempted to say most women, because I'm thinking of my circle of friends, we lie awake at night and second guess everything we ever did in our life.
Right.
Like, I can tell you right now, this is a fun conversation, but tonight I'll go, oh, I should have said that. Or, oh, I talked too much and I didn't let him talk enough. You know, I'm really big on the second guessing thing. So I probably do too much of that. And that's kind of what I have an ongoing process with.
But through the therapy, and I agree with you, I'm a fan as well. So, but I think that through therapy, that makes me a better interviewer, because you have an idea of human beings. I would assume the same is for you, not only as an attorney, but as an author.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, because it depends on what you're trying to write. But for me, it's always, they say character driven. I honestly don't really know what that means, but the way I think of it is it's all about emotional intelligence, right? You're trying to make a character that does believable things, and you're fleshing her out as she goes along. She's defined, in fact, by her actions. And that's, I think we're all of us a lot like that, or at least we should be. I try to always look at someone's actions as opposed to what they say. You know, we all can read about, or maybe have been in a place where maybe you're in an abusive relationship and the guy says, I love you, but he hits you every night. That's not love. So you have to make sure the actions match the words. And I'm always trying to flesh out characters and define them as quickly as possible, because these books are supposed to be entertaining, too. And I never like to waste anybody's time. Like, I'm talking at length now, but that's me talking. Benny doesn't talk like this.
Right.
So, you know, I think you're right. I think, look, all that therapy, anytime you think about yourself and how you interact with the world and how you can be a better person and how maybe you can make the world better, I think that makes your life better. And it should make your fiction better. It probably makes your interviewing better. But, you know, it's just the way to live, right? It's the unexamined life. Really is just a total waste of time. Look at us. We're so deep today. God, I have to write a whole book to talk to you. This really sucks.
Pretty good. So the other thing that we have in common is we're both Philadelphians. And I love reading your novels in part because they take place in Philadelphia. I'm interested in what you make of the city as a place to write crime fiction about.
Huh. Well, I I love it because there is a legal angle in that, you know, you think about the history and the law that was kind of born here. I'm a big fan of the Constitution. I love all the individual liberties, and I love the debate that we have today. There's almost every single amendment is debated today. And so I love all that stuff. But, you know, that said, I think that, and as much as we love Philly, I really think of it more, as I've been doing it longer, as a way to ground the characters. You know, like they're actually from somewhere, and a lot of them aren't. Some are from the West Coast. They act differently from the people right. who are like a South Philly resident, which is kind of where I grew up. It's a very, you know, it's a brick and concrete Warren. And I think somebody who's in the, you know, the Northwest, they have a, there's a more openness. That's true of California as well. You know, there's something different. And I like to use geography to help flesh out character the same way that we, you know, the other stuff we're talking about. Or hobbies. Benny is a rower. I used to row. I was on Penn's first college women's crew. I'm the shortest person and the lousiest rower that ever existed.
I'm now imagining you going up and down the Schuylkill River.
Oh, it's a nightmare, and I can't even swim. I fell out of the boat and almost drowned. That's how good I am at rower. But Benny, of course, is like a great rower. But Benny's a perfect example because I rowed in an eight. Now, I'm a team player. I can tell you that right now. I like people. I love talking to you. I love touring. Betty is not that kind of person. She rolls a skull. She rows alone. And that helps define who she is for the reader, too. So you're usually like, I always think of it as milking the facts. Any fact you have at hand, where they're from, what they like, all helping to flesh out. And what is the emotional baggage they carry around? All helping to flesh out that character and make them more real for the reader.
Does it give a certain tenor to the books? I mean, Philly sports fans are notoriously nasty. So do you think of that as giving there's some sort of context to the characters and the environment that they inhabit?
All right. Well, first, Philly sports fans are enthusiastic. We like to think of it as enthusiastic.
Yeah, I think when you're part of it, you think of it as enthusiastic. I think when you're an outsider looking in, it's kind of thought
you
of
think it
as
it was like
mean.
Homicidal.
Yeah,
like strangely aggressive. I think the only part I'll plead guilty to is I do think, look, Philly is not a fancy place, and it sort of revels in its its not unfanciness. I always think of Philly's real. A lot of people say that about me. Like, you're so real. I'm like, I don't know how to respond because I think everybody's real. So, whatever that note is, you know, the occasional profanity or misbehavior or general unruliness and unimpressiveness, that would be Philly. But we do try to, you know, keep it up. When I tour, I look nice and I get my roots done. I don't curse.
You go full
out.
You
would never know where I'm from.
Yeah. Well, good for you. That's very nice. Larry Kane, who was a longtime Philadelphia news anchor, once told me that Philadelphia, he always thought of Philadelphia as kind of a mutt of a city.
Well, you know what, though? I had a mutt. Mutts are rescues, and we're all into rescues, so it's a good thing. We'll just turn that on its head right now.
No, I think he meant that as a compliment. Yeah.
Yeah, we are keep it real.
So is this schedule comfortable for you? I mean, three books a year, and you have a schedule down, and you keep to it.
Well, I write every day. That's my schedule, and I do 2,000 words a day. I lack a personal life, but that's an advantage. I'm really happy, and I feel so lucky. I just feel so happy in the readers I've, you know, gotten over this time and get to talk to people like you. And it's great. I do think writing doesn't, for me anyway, it doesn't benefit from breaks. It comes much more easily to me, like anything. Like, I guess people who go to gyms, this would not be me, but people go to, like, any kind of routine is a better thing. And so I have a writing thing, and if you write 2,000 words a day, I start basically around 8:30. Now, there's days when it comes really easily, and I'll be done at 6. But there's days when it is a tough. And then you're on till 11 o'clock, but, you know, Fallon's on, and it's not the worst thing, really.
So, and if this question is obnoxious, let me know. But
you can ask anything. You're golden.
In the rock, paper, scissors, if the personal life becomes sizzling, do you think to yourself, a thousand words a day is fine?
I don't know about that. I don't know, man. Because I think the hard thing, look, I have a nice life. I have girlfriends, and we do, you know, like sometimes we'll ride bicycles together. I know it sounds so whole, or we cook or whatever. If I meet a guy, I don't know. I can't say because I am Italian. I might lose my mind. But I'm trying to do less of that. I'm trying to not be distracted. Because the truth is, as you get older, and you will find this, I start to narrow down. Like, I don't do a lot of obligations. I don't travel as much. There's a lot of speaking offers I get that I'd love to take. But I go, you know what really makes me happy? Telling my stories and then getting the downtime I have to play with the dogs or the pony. I have a pony. I sound like a little girl. I have dolls. I play with my dolls. But I don't know. Who's to say? If a man came along, you never know. I used to have a low flashpoint. Now I turned it up a little bit, so we'll see.
Well, I hope you. What's the pony's name?
Buddy.
Buddy the pony, and does
Buddy the pony.
And do you? Is it on a farm somewhere, or is it at your home?
Yeah, I live on a farm. I live on a farm.
Great.
So I grow alfalfa. It's a lovely, quiet life filled with books and tumbleweeds of fur in the house. I have five dogs at this point. Crazy.
Well, Lisa Scottolini's new novel. It's a Rosato and D'Annunzio novel. It is Corrupted. It's published by St. Martin's Press. Lisa, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking the time out.
Thank you. You make this fun.
Thank you so much. A great pleasure. Again, the new novel is Corrupted. It is published by St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.